welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Tonight, this show in the cancer series is on prostate cancer, and I am happy to have two physicians using cutting-edge technology for prostate cancer and a prostate cancer survivor. Prostate cancer is responsible for 35,000 deaths yearly in the United States, with an additional 165,000 men developing the disease in the same period. It is the most common found cancer in men over age 50 and is the second most common cancer affecting all men. If symptoms occur early in the disease, they may include increased frequency of urination, urinary incontinence or inability to urinate, weak urinary flow, pain during urination, erection difficulties or painful ejaculation, and recurrent pain in the hips, thighs, or lower back. The precise cause of prostate cancer is unknown, but certain risk factors have been identified. 2/3 of all prostate cancers are diagnosed among men over age 65, and it is 60% more common among African Americans than Caucasian and Hispanic men. Having a father or brother with prostate cancer also doubles a man's risk of developing cancer. You cannot do much about these risk factors. However, there are lifestyle risk factors that you can change to lower your risk. These include reducing red meat and dairy products, and increasing fruit and vegetables if you eat a diet high in red meat and dairy. Likewise, a diet high in fat may be associated with prostate cancer, as well as breast and colon cancer. So lower the fat if this pertains to you. Research also shows that a sedentary life increases the risk of prostate cancer, so increasing exercises can decrease the risk. Diagnostic tests include, first, routine digital rectal exams to detect swelling or an oversized prostate. Second, routine blood tests to detect prostate-specific antigens, PSA, with a reading under 2.5 or 4, depending upon age, considered normal. Or, 3, a core needle biopsy when cancer is suspected. The conventional treatments for prostate cancer are commonly surgery and radiation. In the past, these have sometimes had negative effects on the quality of life of survivors, leaving some men with incontinence, sexual dysfunction, and other problems. Fortunately, advances in both procedures have decreased the risk of these complications. I am happy to have two physicians who use cutting-edge prostate surgery and radiation who will talk about these procedures and the outcomes tonight. Specific nutrients have been shown to have a beneficial effect on prostate cancer, and a few of these will be mentioned. In one study reported in March 2009 in Nutrition and Cancer, the researchers found an association between long-term consumption of zinc and reduced rates of advanced prostate cancer based upon the data of over 35,000 men of the ages 50 to 76, but not a reduced rate of prostate cancer, only advanced prostate cancer. The relationship between lycopene and prostate cancer is the clearest of all nutritional associations. Lycopene consumption and reduced risk of prostate cancer has been demonstrated in multiple studies, and tomato-based products are the richest source of lycopene in the American diet. Results of a study on the relationship between vitamin E and selenium and prostate cancer have been contradictory, and the latest study, reported in December 2008, found that neither vitamin reduced the risk of prostate cancer, but the debate and research continues. Pomegranate juice has been shown in research to prevent tumors of the prostate and to reduce those that occur. I had direct experience with this fruit when my PSA was elevated to 9.6 3 months ago. At that time, I started taking one capsule of pomegranate elixir daily, and within 2 months, my PSA had dropped to 5. My specialist determined that the elevation was not a result of cancer. Pumpkin seed has also been shown to improve prostate health, and men will appreciate this because it dramatically increases the urinary flow caused by an enlarged prostate. I have also used this successfully over the last year. Some other natural products that have been researched and that may be helpful for preventing or supplementing prostate cancer treatment are curcumin, shown to prevent prostate cancer in research by Core in 2006, SEIT, shown to inhibit prostate cancer cell growth in vitro, and green tea, shown to be effective at treating pre-malignant prostate lesions, and researched and reported by Lee in 2006. Melatonin may inhibit growth of prostate cancer cells, as researched by Sue in 2002. Quercetin may prevent prostate cancer and also complement other treatments when it does occur, according to Zing in 2001. And vitamin D may inhibit prostate cancer growth, according to Wu in 2005. Additional information can be found in Allschuler, Lees, 2007, Definitive Guide to Cancer, and in Life Extension's 2003, Disease Prevention and Treatment, guide based upon thousands of research studies. My first guest tonight is Dr. David Somadi, Chief Division of Robotics and Minimal Invasive Surgery at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, New York City. He is a board-certified urologic surgeon trained in open, laparoscopic, and robotic surgery. He is one of the world's most experienced da Vinci surgeons and one of the only surgeons in the country to have completed 2 fellowships, one in oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, and the other in laparoscopy at Henri Mondor Hospital in France. He has completed more than 1,600 da Vinci surgeries in his career, and since arriving at Mount Sinai a year ago, he has performed over 750 robotic operations. He has proctored and taught urologists all over the world how to perform the endopelvic fascia sparring robotic prostatectomy procedure. He can be reached at 1-888-ROBOT-10 or 1-888-762-6810 or on his website, www.roboticoncology.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, David, and I look forward to an interesting discussion on the da Vinci robotic prostate surgery. Now, first of all, you have done more than 1,600 of the da Vinci robotic prostate surgery.
Yes.
And you're considered a leader in the field. Can you tell us about this intervention?
So robotic prostate surgery involves 2 components. One is the actual technology of the da Vinci, which is under control of the surgeon. And the second component is where the instruments of the robot is attached to the patient.
Mm-hmm.
And as the surgeon moves his hand, the instrument inside the abdomen, inside the patient, moves directly under the control of the surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
This technology has been around since 2000, so it's almost 9 years. I was one of the first ones who started using this. We did the first 11 robotic prostatectomy or prostate surgery out of France.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of this is to make sure that the patients are getting a more precise and more accurate type of prostate surgery without bleeding, better nerve sparing that helps the sexual function, and better continence.
Mm-hmm. So there is a better quality of life afterwards than there was with the old type of prostate surgery.
Without a doubt. And these patients, 90% of our patients go home within 24 hours and only stay in the hospital one night. The risk of infection is obviously is less because they're not spending too much time in the hospital. The catheter that stays after the surgery comes out much earlier, only 5 days.
Really?
That's right. As opposed to 2 weeks with open traditional surgery. Pain is a lot less, so patients don't have to take any morphine or codeine and those kind of medications that would slow down their bowel. And certainly, they can get back to work early, which can save the country millions, if not billions of dollars, of getting people back on their feet and getting back to work.
Now, sexual function is something that is always important to men. Is there any difference in the return to normal sexual function with this procedure than there was with the older procedures?
In our series, there's a big difference. During the open surgery, the sexual function was only 50%. Or half of men that were going for open surgery, they were having sexual activities. Whereas with this particular procedure, it's close to 85% of the men are able to penetrate. And the reason being is that during open surgery, you have a lot of blood that's covering the prostate, and you really can't see and visualize those nerves that are responsible for sexual activity. As a result, you count on your tactile feedback or your fingers to do the nerve sparing, and that's not a very accurate way of doing it. In robotic surgery or da Vinci prostatectomy, there is no blood in the field because of introducing that CO2 gas and the pressure in the abdomen. There's really no blood in the field. If there's no blood in the field, you can actually see what you're doing. You can visualize those nerves. When you see them, you run the risk of damaging them less, and you handle those nerves much more carefully. And as a result, there's about 35% more benefit with sexual activity, higher than what we used to do. So overall, 85% of the patients are able to have sexual activity with this procedure, and over 95% of the patients are able to control their urination. So that whole old mentality of living in diapers and leaking and with the traditional surgery doesn't exist anymore. In the hands of experienced surgeons. And that last part is really the whole deal. This is not about just robotic surgery. It's not about a piece of equipment. It's only about the person who is behind this robotic technology and the experience that they bring in. And if they do this day in and day out, and they have a team, and they have the experience, then the outcome is obviously wonderful.
What are some questions, then, that the listeners, if they had prostate cancer, should ask a physician that they went to so that they arrive at the person who knows about it?
Excellent questions. I think they always want to know who is doing the surgery because a lot of times there could be a lot of other people involved in the actual operation. So if I was the patient, I want to know who is doing the surgery. I want to know how they learned robotic surgery. One of the unique qualifications that we have at Mount Sinai Medical Center and our work is the fact that I'm not only an open surgeon, I also have robotic technology. So it's almost having three surgeons in one head. So having that laparoscopic experience also allows us to be able to do these procedures in a very short period, an hour and a half or so. So I would want to know how they learned robotic surgery, how long does it take to do these cases, what are their complications, how do they manage those complications? I want to know about their volume. Are you doing only one or two cases a week, or are you doing like 10 cases a week? And, of course, the more you do, the better you are. Do you have a team that are involved in the operating room with you?
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly what we have. That team can help and make sure that the patients do well. What type of robotic technology do you have? Do you have the old technique, old robot, or do you have the Da Vinci S, the new robot?
Mm-hmm.
And again, one has to be trained not only in robotic surgery, but also in laparoscopic and open surgery and be able to manage any kind of emergency or urgency that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that a lot of open surgeons talk about robotic surgery, and they tell the patient that unless you have tactile feedback and unless you are touching the prostate, you would not be doing good cancer surgery. And mm-hmm. I hear from our patients all the time. And that's not a very accurate way of looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the traditional open surgeons, they're kind of, they don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like, you know, converting and learning a new thing. So out of the habit, they might say, yes, I have to have my hands there, but there's nothing to touch because mm-hmm. 70-80% of these cancers are T1C, or what we say that there's no firmness or nodules or any abnormalities on rectal exam.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really nothing to touch, and it just confuses the patient.
Oh.
Those are the questions that they really should be asking their doctors.
Mm-hmm. And David, what resources or services do you offer your patients before and after their surgery?
That's a very, very important question because the care starts from the minute they walk into our office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that you asked this question because one of the unique parts of this program that I have built at Mount Sinai is the fact that there's a whole group of teams
mm-hmm.
involved before the surgery. For the international patients or local patients that come in, they would educate them about the Kegel exercises, the exercises that would improve their continence right off the bat. They would help out with their arrangement to stay in New York, their work on their surgeries. They're always available to answer any questions as preparation for the operation. During the surgery, it's me. I'm the one who does the surgery from the beginning to the end, with my team who are going to assist me as far as anesthesiologists and scrub techs. These guys have been with me for years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's important is also after the surgery, there's a huge team. The nurses that are experienced in this field, medical assistants, and other people that are always available to answer the patient when I'm in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
So the key message is that the patients are not alone. And it's not like you get the operation and you never see your doctor again. We're always here. They're always available. If there's any issues, they're always there to troubleshoot. They run it by me. And we get the patients from one end with cancer and with the other side with not only cure of cancer, but also an excellent quality of life.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, can this procedure be used with other types of cancer?
We're using it for bladder cancer, for patients that have invasive bladder cancer. We're removing the whole bladder and creating a new bladder out of small intestine. We've been very successful in doing that. We're also used to remove part of the kidney using this technology for kidney cancer. It's expanding into the GYN, OBGYN, gynecology and oncology. And certainly ENT surgeons are slowly doing some of these cases as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear about the bladder cancer. My niece's husband went to California to have this done, and I wasn't aware of it before. Is it a relatively new procedure?
It's for bladder cancer, we've been doing this for about 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It really cuts down on the amount of bleeding because in bladder surgery, the amount of blood loss was really a lot. And
mm-hmm.
as a result of transfusion, et cetera, patients, it was taking them a long time to really recover, and that has eliminated that part, and they seem to be recovering again much faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's no longer than a bag necessary since you're building a bladder from the intestines. Is that correct?
Again, case by case, it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
For younger guys, we're certainly creating a new bladder for older guys, we may go with the conduit and the bag on the side, depending on the age and the type of how they can handle the new bag,
mm-hmm.
etc. So
mm-hmm.
you decide case by case and also based on the disease.
Oh. I also understand that there is some incontinence for a brief period after the rebuilding of the bladder.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the patients learn how to do the Kegel exercises, and over time that recovers. Now, what's interesting is, as a result of some of the modifications that I've done in the past 2 years almost, by changing the surgery slightly and by looking at our videos for the past 7 years, learning from some of the mistakes and improving the technique, now our continence rate after prostate surgery with the robot is again over 95%.
Oh.
That's as a result of leaving a very long length of urethra and fixing the bladder neck really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are getting off the diapers very early, within weeks to perhaps a month or so, and they move on.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been an amazing revolutionary changes in the past couple of years in our hands.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And will you eventually be using the stem cell?
We're certainly looking into it. We're at the very early stage. We're certainly looking at those opportunities. I'm in touch with many scientists who are involved in this field, and we're inviting them to come in, and we're banking the tissues at Sinai for that particular purpose. And I think that field is extremely promising, and certainly you don't want to jump in and have complications with stem cell research, but by looking at it and taking every step seriously and carefully studying, I think it has a very promising future, and that's something everyone needs to really be aware of.
Right, I agree. Are there other things then that you would like to say, David, about the robotic?
I think Father's Day is coming up. I think while there has been so much emphasis on breast cancer and women's health, I think there's a huge vacuum as far as men's health are concerned. I think the best gift that anyone can give their husband, their father, is to make sure that they go for screening and they go for digital rectal exam and PSAs. I know there has been some controversial studies coming out of Europe about the PSA screening, but as far as I'm concerned, as a urologist in this country, I would continue to push for PSA screening. We may be overdiagnosing few patients, but we're also saving a lot of lives. You'll be surprised to see how many young 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds that come to the office with massive volume of prostate cancer that we are able to save their lives.
Oh,
and I think what was important now in 2009, not only the quality of life is important, but also the cancer cure rate. And with the experience, the volume, the team, an institution like Mount Sinai in New York, who's behind us, we're able to do more than 10, 15 of these cases within an hour and a half or so with no blood loss, going home early, less catheterization, and it's been a fantastic ride. For patients who are willing to read more about this, they can go to our website, which is roboticoncology.com, roboticoncology.com, and there is a lot of information in 6 different languages. And I thank you for having me on your radio.
Well, I thank you. Is there a book in the future, David?
I'm working on putting our own biography and as well as summary of the history of robotics as far as the technique itself and also a lot of patient stories. And within 6 months, we're going to have a book coming out.
Great, great. Well, I appreciate this very much, and would you give us the website one more time then?
The website is roboticoncology.com, roboticoncology.com, and I also post our exciting news on Twitter, and the address on Twitter is Dr. David Samadi, which is Dr. David Samadi, S-A-M-A-D-I, and you can look at some of the postings on Twitter. But the website has a lot of information that I think can answer many questions for our patients.
Well, I thank you very much, David. I appreciate this, and it's been very interesting. It's to me, it's cutting edge, and I think it will be for the listeners.
I appreciate the invitation, and I'm glad we were able to talk about this. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, and you too.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye. My second guest is Dr. Brian Goss, Medical Director of Radiation Oncology at the New Mexico Cancer Center, New Mexico Oncology Hematology Consultants Limited, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He is board certified in radiology and radiation oncology. He was the first physician in New Mexico to perform brain and prostate cancer with rapid arc radiotherapy technology, which is the latest and greatest in radiation treatment for cancer. It delivers the radiation dose to the entire tumor in one arc rather than slice by slice, and a much shorter time period. He discusses the advantages of this procedure. More information is available at area code 505-842-8171. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Brian, and I look forward to an interesting discussion.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you. You are at the New Mexico Cancer Center. Can you tell us some of the services that are provided to your cancer clients?
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. We're a multidisciplinary cancer center here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We offer radiation therapy to our patients. We offer chemotherapy and biological therapy from medical oncology. We also offer imaging with a staff radiologist. Beyond those three main specialties, we also offer a social worker to help coordinate. We have a nonprofit foundation that pays for non-medical expenses that come up in many patients' lives, and then other type of services like continuing education, if you can believe it, hairstyling and makeup classes, and additional things along those lines.
You started something relatively new in the country, and that's the radial arc radiotherapy treatments. How does this work, Brian?
Yes, the rapid arc radiation therapy is really a revolution in the treatment of cancer from a radiation standpoint. And the company Varian, who pretty much dominates the market of radiation delivery that makes the machines, has come up with a way to deliver treatment much, much faster. So the patients are much more comfortable. Traditional high-tech treatments may take 20 minutes per day for a patient, and now that can be reduced down to maybe 2 to 3 minutes.
Oh, great.
And they were able to do this by delivering all of the radiation with the machine moving around the patient, and it makes one circle around the patient, continuously delivering the radiation to the patient and targeting the area of concern while maximally sparing the patient's normal tissues. And hopefully that'll give us even better results than we've had in the past.
Are there other benefits besides the shortening time for the patient?
Yeah, well, the shortening time's a big part of it. One, because of the speed of delivery allows the patient to only be on, you know, the hard treatment couch for a very short time. But another very important aspect in a traditional treatment where you may be delivering radiation for 15 or 20 minutes, organs move. And so if you're treating a prostate patient with a very focused radiation treatment and the bladder is filling, moving the prostate, or the rectum is changing size, that will move the target prostate in and out of the field. It'll expose the rectum or bladder to more radiation, whereas this does not. It's a big advantage in a number of ways. Also, along with the speed, much less radiation has to be delivered into the patient to get the same dose to the cancer, and that reduces, again, harmful side effects to surrounding tissues. Multiple advantages, thankfully.
And why would I, as a patient, want to be treated with RapidArc?
Well, if you're a patient facing a cancer diagnosis like you actually have, so mm-hmm. you understand that, you want to get the best treatment you can and to be the most effective to killing the cancer, yet sparing the rest of your body the harms of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And along those lines, that's what RapidArt can offer to many of the patients with some of the more challenging cancers like head and neck cancer, prostate cancer,
mm-hmm.
that have very sensitive organs surrounding the cancer, so that you want to sculpt or paint the dose on the tumor,
mm-hmm.
yet avoid the normal tissue.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of radiation is used in RapidArc?
Well, RapidArc is produced by something called a linear accelerator, and which is kind of the standard delivery machine, but does a number of things that are very special. Traditional radiation therapy, I guess you can think of the analogy of a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
So radiation is, and this is photon radiation, just like light.
Mm-hmm.
So radiation is like a flashlight. If you buy a flashlight and you get the plastic square tip on the front, then you shine it on the wall and it forms a square. And just like that with the radiation therapy, there's a beam of radiation that comes out the head of the machine, and that's shaped first into a square,
mm-hmm.
just like the tip of a flashlight. The next way that we shape the radiation beam is with 120 metal leaves that go from side to side in that square beam, so you can shape those leaves in a circle or a square or in many shapes, because tumors don't come in squares usually.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, being a nurse, mm-hmm. the physicians love to take credit for things.
Mm-hmm.
But these technologies, we really owe our thanks to the software engineers and the physicists who have come up with amazingly complex solutions
mm-hmm.
to delivering radiation.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, the next level of complexity are those metal leaves that shape around the tumor. And now these smart physicists and software engineers came up with a way to move the leaves, what we call these metal leaves,
mm-hmm.
all the time that the beam of radiation is on.
Mm-hmm.
So if you imagine, again, shining your flashlight on the wall, and then if you have some thin leaves, in this case 5-millimeter leaves, sliding in front of the light, and that's going to change the shape of the projection of light on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that we do in radiation therapy. So that's called intensity modulated radiation therapy.
Mm-hmm.
The beam is always on, but these leaves slide across the beam and they block certain areas,
mm-hmm.
and they let more radiation go to the areas that you want. And instead of just using, say, one beam coming like the flashlight at the wall,
mm-hmm.
these days, many times we'll have kind of a spoke and wheel effect where you'll maybe have 9 beams coming
mm-hmm.
from each angle around
mm-hmm.
the patient in a circle, like a wagon wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And that reduces the amount of radiation from each beam, so that goes through your normal tissue relatively safely. But again, another analogy, if your radiation is also a wave,
mm-hmm.
so if you hit your hands in a pool or a bathtub on each side of your body and you create 2 small waves, what happens in the middle? It sums to a bigger wave.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing if you have multiple beams coming in.
Mm-hmm.
All of those come together to form enough punch to kill a tumor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's intensity modulated radiation therapy. And that's been the standard of care for the last 10 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But now RapidArc enters, and instead of having just multiple beams coming in from all directions, say 9 beams, the machine rotates around the patient continuously delivering radiation
mm-hmm.
From every angle. So instead of 9 beams, you have around 360 beams.
Mm-hmm.
And each one can deliver even less radiation, but all pointed at the target. So it allows for even more sculpted radiation therapy.
Mm-hmm.
To this is kind of technical, but to the last part of it is to shape the radiation even more. The speed that the machine rotates around you can get faster or slower. So that can mean more radiation from one area or less mm-hmm. radiation from one area. The machine can pump out more radiation per minute or less per minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second way it differs. And then third is the leaves that I was telling you about can mm-hmm. move at different speeds.
Mm-hmm.
So all those add together to create what we call dose distribution in the cancer,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
sparing the surrounding tissues. So how about that?
Do you use a computer with this?
Yes, we're completely dependent on computer technology. The process of radiation after the patient is consulted and we see them is
mm-hmm.
very dependent on all of the technology. The first thing that we do is we take them and do a CT scan
mm-hmm.
and sometimes an MRI scan, sometimes a PET scan. This all gives us better information how to localize the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
That's fed into what we call our treatment planning computer, where we fuse all those images into one. CT is fused to MR, is fused to PET CT, and the physician outlines the tumor areas, be it a tumor in the prostate or lymph node in the neck, and then working with a variety of healthcare providers, physicists, and people called dosimetrists that help us make the plan,
mm-hmm.
we come up with these radiation plans to deliver the radiation to the tumor. And after that's completed, and that's done with these very complicated computer programs, like I said, we're dependent on and happy that Bill Gates and people like that
mm-hmm.
have created fantastic computers
right.
programs to do that. So after we've completed the plan, it's such a fantastic thing. It's kind of like magic, I guess. So we still don't completely believe the computer. So we have our physicist colleagues actually do a mock treatment from the radiation machine on something called a phantom. So
mm-hmm.
before any patient gets treated, all the plans are checked to make sure what this wonderful plan in the computer says it does actually does. So the physicists measure that, and that's checked out. We approve it. Then the patient comes in the day of treatment, and we put them on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And the machine also has CT scanners hooked to the machine so that right before treatment, there's image guidance
mm-hmm.
of the treatment at the time of treatment. So right before treatment, you do another CT scan, and you can see, for example, in a prostate, you can see the prostate in three dimensions. You can see the bladder and the rectum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the treatment plan CT that I told you about,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of like a video game. You can pick up the image of the current image and lay it on top of the planning image, and then after you press accept,
mm-hmm.
the robotic couch will move the patient to that exact position within a millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're spending all this time coming up with a beautiful plan with rapid arc,
mm-hmm.
but you just throw the patient on the table and you're missing with great accuracy, you're not doing anybody
mm-hmm.
a favor. But if you can localize the patient and then deliver the radiation accurately,
mm-hmm.
it's great for the patient. So that's mm-hmm. kind of the whole process of the treatment from consult
mm-hmm.
through treatment.
Mm-hmm. And how long does the treatment take, Brian?
The treatment traditionally with intensity modulated radiation therapy would take about 15 to 20 minutes, and now with rapid arc will take about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And how many series does a patient usually have, or does that vary by the tumor?
That varies, but for typical diseases, if you talk about prostate, you're talking about 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
lung 7 weeks, breast 7 weeks,
mm-hmm.
rectum 5.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies. Now that we've become very accurate, as I've kind of
mm-hmm.
talked to you about it
mm-hmm.
at length or ad nauseum,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
There are some treatments that we do in one treatment or 1 to 5 treatments called stereotactic radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, we deliver a much higher dose per day. And we can only do that because we can limit the toxicity by just targeting the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
Before we had all this high technology, it was too dangerous to deliver these ablative doses of radiation. But
mm-hmm.
now we do commonly. Again, it's much more comfortable for a patient to get, and this goes back to you, so early stage lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
inoperable patient,
mm-hmm.
which is not a small number of patients, who had a curable tumor using surgery but couldn't get surgery, we can deliver what we call stereotactic body radiotherapy
mm-hmm.
in 3 treatments, give it probably about an 80% chance of controlling that tumor
mm-hmm.
versus traditional radiation therapy where we would drag the patient in probably for Monday through Friday for 35 treatments
mm-hmm.
and would not have as good a chance of controlling it.
Yeah.
And we can only do those type of high-dose treatments because of technology like rapid arc
mm-hmm.
and image-guided radiation therapy.
Now, is the rapid arc used with all types of cancers?
Not all types, but more and more
mm-hmm.
where you want to treat something very focally
mm-hmm.
and you're concerned about other organs around the cancer,
mm-hmm.
it's a good choice for those patients.
Mm-hmm. Now, weren't you one of the first in using this with prostate cancer in New Mexico?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we were the first to use it. We're the first center to offer this rapid arc technology in New Mexico, and the first 2 patients that we treated, one had a metastatic lesion from lung cancer to the brain
mm-hmm.
that we treated, and he's done very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then another was, as you said, a prostate cancer patient. You know, the prostate patient has
mm-hmm.
to come in for such a long number of treatments, like 43 treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So experiencing minimal side effects and then doing it in an efficient manner is very important to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also very pleased with his treatment.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, Brian, do you have services or products that you would like to talk about?
Just the ones that I described
mm-hmm.
as our cancer center offering
mm-hmm.
services from radiation oncology, medical oncology, and radiology
mm-hmm.
all under one roof and offering
mm-hmm.
those complete services for patients
mm-hmm.
from helping get the diagnosis through treatment and then supportive care.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we focus on.
And how could potential clients reach you?
That would be at 505-822-3857, and that's New Mexico Cancer Center, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our address is 4901 Lang Boulevard, Albuquerque, New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
87109. We also offer care in Gallup, New Mexico, and that includes all of those services. We offer care in Silver City and Rio Rancho and medical oncology, additional clinics in one other area
mm-hmm.
in New Mexico.
And is there a book in the future?
A book in the future from me?
Yeah.
At this point, I'm busy taking care of patients clinically. In the past, I put together 2 books, more interview-type books, if you
mm-hmm.
will,
mm-hmm.
on applying to medical school
mm-hmm.
for, I guess you would say, non-traditional students
mm-hmm.
that had worked prior to starting medical school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you're keeping good case histories because it sounds like this might be of interest to people that have cancer, and having case histories are always something people like to read.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I found that when I did the book on applying to medical school,
mm-hmm.
because I approached that, I interviewed people, you know, like you're doing,
mm-hmm.
From a variety of walks of life,
mm-hmm.
that people that have been accountants or lawyers or nurses or physical therapists or
mm-hmm.
are marketing people, a complete variety of people and what they,
mm-hmm.
their experiences, what they brought with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised how interested people were in, you know, instead of reading a summary.
Right, right.
They were getting more firsthand and saying, I'm a pharmacist and I'm applying to medical school. And here's some guy that did the same thing.
Right, right.
And it, yeah, so I had a lot of interesting responses.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. So maybe once my kids get a little older and I have some more time.
Yeah, good.
But, yeah.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time, Brian, to talk
sure.
with me. And this has been very interesting, and I'm sure it'll be helpful to the listeners.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing. I think getting this information out to the public and including such a nice range of practitioners from what you would say traditional Western medicine to alternatives and to the blending of that for the care of the whole patient is so important, and I really applaud your work.
Thank you. My last guest is Mr. Daniel Goldstone, a prostate cancer survivor who used a holistic approach to recovery. He is a financial planner in Michigan and has a Bachelor's of Art in Economics. His book, Advanced Prostate Cancer in Me, is in the second edition. More information is available at www.alternativeprostatecancer.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dan, and I look forward to an interesting discussion. First, tell me how you found out that you had cancer and what you think caused it.
Well, in April of 2005, I went to see my family practitioner for a yearly exam. And after the exam, he said, you're in great health. Let's just draw some blood to confirm that. And my PSA blood test showed that my number was 20 at the time, and normal is less than 4.
Mm-hmm.
So he referred me to a urologist to further explore the possibility of having prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm. And then what was the diagnosis and the prognosis in the end? Was it prostate cancer?
Yes. In fact, after the urologist ordered a biopsy, which showed that all 12 cores of the biopsy had cancer, two up to 75%, and my new PSA moved to 21 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it was quite shocked, of course.
And what did they tell you as far as prognosis?
My prognosis was that I had a 50-50 chance of survival, according to my urologist. And I was sort of shocked because I actually felt great. The only symptoms I had was urination in the evening, that I'd get up in the evening, which I thought was normal for men over 50, that they would occasionally have to relieve themselves. But I really had no other symptoms other than that.
And what was your treatment regime?
Well, after visiting a number of doctors, surgeons, radiologists, I decided to have external beam radiation, but I was supposed to have hormone treatment coupled with it, but I only had one 3-month Lupron shot because I had what they call the unusual side effects from that treatment. And it was, quite frankly, the worst 6 months of my life of being on the hormone treatment along with the radiation. And unfortunately, it didn't really work. Because 9 months later, my cancer was back.
Oh. And what did you do then?
Well, my doctor wanted to initiate more treatment. He wanted to do first hormones, and then I said, well, with your unusual reaction to the therapy, that he suggested the radiation seeds. And after researching the radiation seeds and looking at everything, I decided that I needed to find a holistic approach that would work, and I needed to find it immediately. And one day I was visiting the health food stores with my girlfriend, and she found a supplement that was very rich in pomegranate extract along with turmeric and a number of other herbal recipes. And I added that along with tart cherry juice and a few other things, and it initially just lowered my PSA ever so slightly, but I thought as long as I had a negative velocity, that I should continue with that approach, because according to WebMD, there is no cure for advanced prostate cancer. And what makes prostate cancer advanced is it's not confined to the prostate capsule. It was in the outside tissues and nerves. And after researching it, I decided that my only real chance was to think out of the box and to go holistic with it. So with a detoxification, tea, many herbs, supplements, change in diet, and change in the water supply, I was able to totally reverse it over a 26-month period, and I reduced my PSA from 2.39 down to 0.45. Over that period, and today I'm cancer-free. And the other nice thing about it is I actually feel better today than I did prior to my cancer.
Now, Dan, can you give us some of the specifics, like specific herbs and what you did as far as detoxing and some specifics that might help other people?
Sure. The detoxing was fluorescence tea from the floral company. It has 8 herbs in it. And what it does is basically remove all your toxins from your body and strengthens your immune system and repairs your cells.
Now, that's not Essiac, right?
Pardon?
That's not the Essiac tea.
It is considered the Essiac.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
There's the 4 herb. I did the 8 herb. And I would do 2 ounces in the morning and 2 ounces in the evening. Another thing I found out I've been doing unknowingly is I mimic the Budweek diet, which consists of flaxseed oil, high omega-3, and organic cottage cheese, which is high in sulfuric protein. Another thing is the water supply. A lot of people drink it from the faucet. It is enriched with chlorine and other chemicals.
Right.
And they also drink a lot of bottled plastic water, which isn't good either. According to my holistic doctor, water is shipped in non-refrigerated trucks in the summertime. The plastic melts into the water, which attacks and weakens your immune system. So I only drink either filtered water or water shipped in glass. So I control the water supply. And as far as food is concerned, I only eat and drink organic meat and milk.
Right.
And I think that is one of the reasons that I contracted advanced prostate cancer at 53, because of all the meat have growth hormones in it.
Right.
And milk does too, which accelerates tumor growth.
Right. Now, did you use any mental and spiritual activities, such as meditation, prayer, affirmation?
I meditated a bit and prayed and I think that's all helpful. I do have a quick story to tell you. And one night after drinking the tea for 2 to 3 weeks, I slept for 12 hours. I never sleep for 12 hours. And I woke up, and I felt that my prostate cancer was totally gone. And I got up the next morning, and I was supposed to urinate like I used to when I was 18 years old. And all this black stuff came out. So I'm thinking, I don't know if it was a dream or what happened, but boom, it was gone. Yeah, it wasn't gone, but I followed up with a PSA blood test that said that basically my tumor shrunk 75% overnight.
Have you continued then most of this regime since your recovery?
Yes, I have. I continue to take my supplements and watch what I eat and drink. And continue quarterly doing the fluorescence tea to take out any impurities that happen to have arrived. But I don't anticipate the cancer ever coming back as long as I continue to watch what I eat, drink, and continue with my supplements.
And Daniel, how long has it been since your last recovery?
Oh, since I was diagnosed, it's been 4 years.
Well, that's good. Well, this is interesting, and can you now tell us about your books and how the listeners can reach you, Daniel?
Yes, my book is called Advanced Prostate Cancer and Me, subtitled How I Reduced My PSA 100% Holistically, second edition.
Mm-hmm.
You can also go to my website at www.alternativeprostatecancer.com and contact me if you have any questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. I thank you very much, and this has been very interesting, and I'm sure it will help listeners to hear about it.
Well, thank you, Carl. I hope it reaches to some of the people out there that are looking for some help.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.